This story brings tears to my eyes. I was raised in the United Church, really like hardcore raised in the United Church. My mom, as I said, is a diaconal minister, and before she was commissioned as a minister in 2010, and before that she was a lay worship leader and a lay children's minister and a lay singer. And I always sang in the choir. In 2001, my father died, and in 2002, my stepfather's wife died. Some of you might know him, Reverend Jack Neild. He was the minister at Cedar Park United all the way through the 70s and the 80s. And then my mom and Jack got married in 2004. And it was like, for me, I had one dad when I was a child, and I had a different dad when I was an adult. So sometimes you'll hear me say my dad, and it's not always clear which one I'm talking about. The church was the most important thing in my life. There were weeks, months, years in my childhood and my teenage life where I ate more dinners in the basement of Glebe St. James United in Ottawa than I ever ate in our dining room or kitchen at home. Church was not Sunday morning. And I was confused by those who were just there on Sunday morning. Like, didn't you want to come to youth council? Don't you want to sing in the choir? Why are you not serving on 14 committees? Which I have to say has continued. I do love a committee. It's a good time. I had a bit of a wilderness period myself. When my dad died, it was really difficult, and I lost myself for a little while. I had been discerning a call to ministry when I was a teenager and in my first year of university in 2001, and then things went off the rails. And it took me a good long time to get back where I was going. It took me 13 years to finish my first year of university. I came back, I found my family again, I got sober, it's a big deal. And then I decided that what I really needed to do was a PhD. This was 100% necessary. If anyone here has ever done that before, if you're discerning it, I don't recommend. Please go and do something else. But I thought I was going to be a teacher. I thought I was going to teach in university. And I taught in universities, and I taught at McGill and at Carleton University and the University of Regina all the way through grad school. And my favorite time of teaching was never undergraduates, because I gotta tell you, they don't want to be in that intro to mythology class. They are mostly engineering students, they are taking it as an English credit, and they really just want to know what's on the exam. But I also had the pleasure of teaching for learning and retirement, lifelong learning. And I've got to say, my favorite crowd of people to teach are the ones who want to be there. I was also really lucky in that I was welcomed into a United Church family in Regina when I arrived there to do my master's degree. Wesley United, right near the university, the minister there, Reverend Cindy Bourgeois, had been at my home congregation in Ottawa for a while she was doing her studies. And then so I went out and found her, and they brought me in, and they let me preach, and they let me teach, and they let me be part of the community in a really full way. When I was moving, I said, well, I have to land on Tuesday, so that I've got Tuesday night and Wednesday night to get organized, because choir will be on Thursday, and I don't want it to be the day after I get there. Church choir is really important. So I taught, and I preached, and I was part of the community, and I thought I was going to be a teacher. And then I finished my PhD in 2024, submitted it in October of 2024, and I had about 6 weeks to wait. Usually have to wait some time while the people who make the decisions read it through and mark it up with their red pen, and then you sit in a room and they grill you on it for, well, mine was 3.5 hours. It was a lot. But in that time, I was really anxious. I was really worried about finding a job. As you all, or many of you probably know, university education in Canada, they're not hiring a lot of new humanities professors. They're not interested in bringing in new people to teach mythology, and it doesn't make them any money. And there was not a single job in Canada. And I thought, oh, it's okay, I'll go to the States. And then Donald Trump got elected for a second term, and I said, I think I'll stay in Canada. And then my mom sent me a link to a job with the Naganhaga Regional Council. I have coffee over FaceTime every morning, over video chat with my parents. I am a 43-year-old child. And so the next morning I was having coffee with them and we were talking about the job and my dad said, it's probably a reach, you're not really qualified. You're not a minister, like really. It's probably a reach, but you should apply anyway. And part of that, some of the folks in the room, apply to jobs as if you are a mediocre man who will apply to everything. So I applied and I interviewed. And I thought, I'm not getting this job. And then 2 days after I defended my dissertation, Reverend Eric Hébert Daly, who's our executive minister, the executive minister for our regional council, he called and he said, Esther, we'd like you to be our community of faith support minister. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah. We see you in this job. We see you in this calling and vocation. And it was like a lead weight, an anvil lifted off my shoulders. I had been resisting this work in the church. I had been resisting ministry for 20 years. I said, this is not me. God, can I do literally anything else? I'm gonna go and get a PhD instead of just getting a job in the church. And as soon as I said yes, I knew it was the right thing to do. There is a release in recognizing Jesus. There is a release in recognizing the Spirit. There is a release in recognizing how we work with God in the world. And I think that this is what Cleopas and his friend were experiencing. These guys are not in a good emotional space. The vibes are all wrong. They are having a terrible time. They come into Jerusalem triumphant with Jesus on that Sunday that we call Palm Sunday. And everyone is cheering for them, and loud hosannas, and there are hymns. And they come into the temple, and Jesus teaches, and he talks. And the whole community comes around him and says, you are it. And then he gets arrested. And then he gets crucified, and he dies. And Peter, and Simon, and Andrew, and Zacharias, and Cleopas, and his friend, and they all said, what have we done? What have we done? We have spent the last years, following this man from place to place around Israel, around Judea. We have walked from Bethlehem, we have walked from Nazareth, we have been in Bethany, we watched him raise Lazarus from the dead, but now he is dead. Imagine the loss. Imagine the confusion. Your prophet is dead. And then they're walking along the road. I think, you know what? It's time to go home. I've got fields to till. It's time to go home. And this man comes along and he starts talking with them. And he's a great teacher, and they've been listening to him teach for a year. Like, it's not like they haven't heard Jesus teaching. And this man comes along, and he tells them about Moses, and he tells them about the prophets, and he tells them about the scriptures. And they're pumped up. They're thinking, you know, this is good. Jesus has died. He wasn't the Messiah. It is a small measure of joy that we can learn from someone else. But they thought that they were alone. They thought that he had left them. I think it's really significant in Luke that it is in the breaking of the bread that they recognized him. When we have communion, when we have our Lord's Supper ritual, the minister says, on the night before he died, he took the bread and he broke it and said, "This is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. This is my body broken for you." And then Cleopas and his friend, they come to the, assumably a guest house or someone's house where they knew them, and they're sitting down and they're having a meal. And Jesus, who they don't know is Jesus, they've been kept from recognizing him. He breaks the bread. He breaks his body for them. And they recognize him. My dad never wanted to say, "Christ is risen. Jesus is risen." It was always, "Christ is rising. Christ is rising. He is rising indeed." And his thought was that this is not something that happened once and then we move on. Christ is rising within us, around us, in our lives, all of the time. Sometimes I think we're a little bit like Cleopas. Well, not sometimes I think. I think often we are like Cleopas and his friend. And we're walking along and we're saying, "Oh my God, why is the United Church? Why is the United Church fading away?" Some of you were with me in Beaconsfield last October when we shared some information around the Toward 2035 project that from the denomination. This is a project of looking at data. It's hard data to look at. It shows us what all of us in the pews have known for years. Less people are coming to church, although there is a lovely full church here this morning, which just warms my heart. But less people are coming. Many of us harken back to that glory days of the 1990s. I was a teenager in the 90s. There were a lot of people. And we say, it's confusing. It's scary. It's concerning. I feel like my church, is on the road to Emmaus. I feel like we're walking along and we're a bit dejected. Maybe we've had some turnover in our ministry, a few different ministers over a few different years. Maybe our young people are not really fired up about coming to church anymore. And our kids and our grandkids have other things that they would rather do on a Sunday morning. It's hard to see Jesus in our lives when things are not going the way that we had hoped that they would go. Like Cleopas and his friend, we are in a period of dejection. The interesting thing is that it is in these times of anxiety and these times of sorrow, because let's be clear, our church is not dying. but it is transforming. It is becoming something completely different than it was. And that itself is hard. It's hard to hear that things are different than they were. When I'm talking about this, because I have to say many of my sermons are around the same topic, I like to talk about the hymn books. I grew up with the red book, that one with the cross on the front that was the Anglican and the United hymn book all together. And it was super annoying because the music was here and the words were there, unless you got one of the special choir editions that you never could get eventually because people took them home and they never brought them back to church again. And I loved the Green Book. I think I saw a copy of the Green Book back there, Songs for a Gospel People. I loved the Green Book. And then we got Voices United. I do not like change. I like things to be familiar, and I like them to go the way that I expect them to go. It took me, I don't know, probably 2 years to feel good about Voices United. Because I knew where all the hymns were in the Red Book. 282, 316. That's the Mozart one. Oh my God, the title, yes. There is no question this is a better hymn book than the Red Book. The music, at least, is on the same line as the words. And a lot of those great hymns from the Green Book, from Songs for Gospel People, also made their way in to Voices United. And then we got More Voices, which I have to say, this is probably my favorite one right now. I love a good More Voices. I was also Ron Klusmeyer and Pat Mayer, they were all in Ottawa, Ruth Duck, they were all Ottawa folks when I was growing up. So we had some pretty fantastic United Church music at that time. And a lot of those are in here now. But it's still hard, even when we know it's a good change. Even when we know it is a good rising, we have to go through the mournful period. We have to go through the walking down the road before we can recognize Jesus in our lives. This is one of the things that Luke wants us to remember all of the time. And we see this all the way through the Gospel of Luke, and we see this all the way through Acts, which was written by the same author. And this is the fun thing. So my PhD is in New Testament studies. I spent a really, really, really long time reading Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. But John is like a totally different, John's out there. He's doing some weird stuff. Because we have Mark, and Mark was one of the sources that Luke used when he was writing his version, and he was one of the sources that Matthew used when he was writing his version, we can see the differences. And this is really fun. To me, this is what I wrote my dissertation on, Gospel of Matthew, particularly the changes that Matthew makes to his source documents, so bear with me. Luke has a perfectly good version of the Jesus story. Totally serviceable. Mark is fine. Tells us about his ministry, time in the desert, teaching. There's a miraculous healing. There's some miraculous feeding. Good stories. Palm Sunday, Passion, death. Oh no, women at the tomb. And he rises again. Totally fine. And then Luke comes along and he's like, it'll do, but I can make it better. And what he does, what Luke does, is that he infuses the whole story with his theology of the risen Christ, of the rising Christ. For Luke, Jesus rising is not about when he rose. It's not about the miracles that happened then. It's not about feeding the 5,000 then. It's not about healing and raising Lazarus from the dead then. It is about the feeding now. It's about the miracles that Jesus does in our lives and that we do in the world now. When we accept the gospel into our heart, when we accept the good news of Jesus into our hearts, that is when we can go out and be the rising Christ. This is not something that happened 2,000 years ago and stopped. This is something that happens every day in our lives. When I came in this morning, one of the things I like to do when I come to a new church is to spend some time looking at the bulletin boards. You can learn a lot about a congregation from what they keep on the bulletin boards. Sometimes it's fun to see the relics on the bulletin board. I would note for you that over on the hallway over here, the sign of directing you to the rooms says M&O conference room, directing you to upstairs. I think that's probably on us. If anyone remembers the Montreal and Ottawa conference, 7 years ago, we switched to the Nagatawa Regional Council. So I think we owe you a new sign. I think that's on us. But I saw two things that really jumped out to me that it seems like they are really important to your congregation. And the first is sponsorship of children. There is information at the back of the church, there's information on the bulletin board in the hallway, there's information on the bulletin board outside of the kitchen. It seems to me, and I'm reading into this, and you can tell me, oh, actually, Esther, that's just one person, but I'm not going to believe you, and I don't want to hear it if it is. This is one of the ways that you as a congregation live out your life as the rising Christ, as spirit-filled people. And the other thing that I saw that really, really struck me as important was Bread and Beyond. There is so much food insecurity, so much food insecurity across our country and really here in Montreal. We have a huge population, as I'm sure all of you know, a huge population of migrants, of refugees, of disenfranchised people, of people who are making minimum wage and their paychecks do not feed them the way that they did, of older folks on a fixed income where their income used to buy them pork chops and chicken breasts and now it buys tofu. And I eat a lot of tofu, but it is not the same. Jesus fed the 5,000. He also fed the 4,000. But Luke also tells us a story in Acts of feeding the 3,000. And now we, here, we feed those in our own community. We are the rising Christ. We are the spirit-filled people. When Jesus died on the cross, the miracles didn't go away. They did not disappear with his crucifixion, with his death. The miracles transferred to us. And the yoke is heavy. There is no question. The yoke is heavy, but the burden is light. When we take the gospel into our hearts, when we live the rising Christ in the world, miraculous things happen. Amen. We were supposed to sing Jesus Christ is risen today before as I read the sermon. Sorry. What I'm going to suggest, Lucia, is if we sing Jesus Christ is risen today now, because he is risen, he is rising,
Alleluia.
Thank you for praying. And so we'll sing that hymn and then we'll hear the anthem.
Yeah, sure.
So, Jesus Christ is risen today. Voices United. Number 155. I don't know what number this is in the Red Book if you're still using it. I know it's in there, but 155 in Voices United.